Hay House is proud to present this tape from Stuart Wilde entitled Loving Relationships.
Hello, this is Stuart Wilde. Welcome to our tape series on loving relationships. In this series, we're going to look at how you can interact with those people around you, family, friends, your lovers, those people that are a part of your working life, to create energy patterns or basically associations that will allow you to grow as an individual and will allow them to grow through the magnificence of the energy that you sustain and maintain. As we look at relationships in the physical plane, we can see that they are, in fact, the one way that we learn most about ourselves. It's hard for an individual to have a real true idea of who they actually are. It's the same way as you don't really know what your face looks like. Everybody else recognizes you simply and easily by just recognizing the shape of your nose, the color of your eyes, and so on. But we never really know what we look like. And in the same way, by having relationships, we get to look at a mirror reflection of ourselves as we begin to see, hey, what is the energy that I'm putting out in the world? For the world reflects back to you exactly whatever it is that you put out. As a metaphysical author and lecturer, I take a view of the world that comes from perceiving the inner energy of things. More and more now, the scientists of the world are coming to a unified force field theory, meaning that basically everything that we see is one and the same energy. And this is basically the mystical approach to life, the same approach as the teachings that came down from the mystical masters of 500 BC and the mystical teachings that have come down through the ages. It's an understanding that there's an inner energy to all things. You may want to call that inner energy God, or you may explain it to yourself as the universal mind, to put it in Jungian terms, but basically we're looking at this divine light that pervades all things. The way that you become powerful as an individual is for you to express more and more of that divine light, for the light is inside you as it is in the sky, in the earth, in the animals, in the people that you will be having relationships with. And the beauty of interpersonal relationships is that it is a place for you to work out some of these karmic patterns that you have inside of yourself. Not only karmic patterns that perhaps come down through the ages through reincarnation, if you accept that concept, but karmic patterns that are basically reflections of weaknesses and strengths that are inside your inner personality. The mystical perception of life says that everything you see and everything that happens to you is a reflection of the inner you. You create thoughts and feelings, you create relationships, you create love and acceptance or a lack of love or a lack of communication, whatever you happen to be doing at this time. You create that energy and you reflect it out from within yourself. It's almost like these sort of wave bands of rolling energy that leave you at every moment of every second of your breathing, waking life. And also, they are there in the night process as well, as they collate and recollate themselves through dreams. But anyway, here you are, you're this individual and you're made up of energy. The molecules of your body may seem solid, but of course they're not. They're just energy. Your thoughts are as solid as your arm. Your feelings are as solid as your leg. You are a mass of evolving, moving energy going through the physical plane on what I consider a heroic journey, learning about yourself. And the people you meet reflect that learning to you. It is like looking into a clear lake and suddenly seeing, ah, this is what I am. And as you look at that, you can see beauty, you can see strength, you can see caring and loving and nurturing. And then also, you will see the weaknesses or the areas that you may want to work upon. And so the whole point of having a loving relationship is not only to have a pleasing and pleasant surrounding, to have the pleasure of giving and receiving, but there is also a metaphysical undercurrent to loving relationships, because it is through those relationships that you will grow and become more powerful as an individual. As we look at the whole concept of relationships, first we should clarify what kind of relationships are we talking about. Obviously, there is the relationship between a wife and a husband. But beyond that, there is the relationship with all of your family members, your brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, anyone that is within your family or close to your family. And those relationships are obviously very, very different to, say, a marital status or the status of two lovers. Further beyond that is your relationship to your parents, if they're still alive or if they're still a part of the family unit, and then the relationship that you have with your friends, your workmates, people that you have obligations to financially, people that you are involved with in one way or another. Each one of those relationships will have a different set of rules, but they all have the same rule within them. And that basically, in my view, is that you have to look at people not as personalities, not as physical bodies, not as your aunt or your brother or your girlfriend or boyfriend. The way to begin to understand people is to view those people that are pulled into your life as infinite. They're not their bodies, they're not their mind. They're not their emotions. They are a spark of the infinite goodness in all things. They are a spark of the divine light. And that divine light inside of them is struggling to express itself. It is struggling to better itself in one way or another. Even the most evil person in the world is trying to better himself in some way. A thief is trying to better himself by stealing to create his own abundance. And an evil person is trying to better himself because usually he'll be using evil for power. And so as you look at the world and you look at people failing and you look at their weaknesses and you look at them not following through, you can understand that inside all of that, there is a struggle, there is a hope for a better time, there is this glimpse of personal transcendence. As you begin to look at those people around you as infinite rather than personalities, you can begin to lock in a feeling of non-judgment or non-criticism for them. And does not know what their motivations are. You cannot know what their life's purpose is. You cannot know what higher energy patterns they might be trying to achieve. The way one achieves abundance is usually to experience poverty. And within the experience of poverty, there's a point inside of that where you say, gosh, this is absolutely revolting, and you begin to move towards abundance. The way that you experience goodness is to wallow in evil. In the Taoist philosophy, there are no absolutes. You cannot say to a Taoist sage, for example, this is a long journey, because he would say to you, long compared to what? A long journey, if you're walking, may be 20 miles, but it's not long compared to how far the Yangtze flows. And so when you look at the world in a more infinite sense, the categories begin to break up. They begin to become less defined. And as you look at the people in your life, you need to begin to look at all of those people in whatever type of relationship you have with them in a less defined way, understanding that although a person in your family or one of your fellow workers may have a point of view or may be involved in actions that you do not agree with, if you can see them in an infinite light, if you can see them in a loving acceptance of what they are, you can allow them to go be whatever it is they want to be. You can allow them to act in whatever way they want to act, even if you don't understand them. And so the trick to loving relationships is to view the entire planet as a schoolhouse. Everybody's on some kind of training course, whatever that might be, and you don't know what they're studying for. You don't know that the tramp in the gutter that is lying there drunk isn't training for something. Now you may say, well, what's he training for? Well, he's training to understand himself, and maybe he has to fall into an abject situation where he's absolutely at rock bottom before he can clear out all of that programming that's inside of him in order to create that divine, angelic person that's inside of him. And you can watch this in your life all over. You can watch people who have gone bankrupt and then rebuilt their life in a more beautiful way afterwards. Divorce, your serious illness, accidents sometimes. Each of those things is not viewed by me anyway as a negative experience. It's viewed as part of the greater learning process, part of this unfolding of mankind. And as you look at the world today, we're looking at a world of tremendous amount of communication. We have the ability to learn and pick up information instantly, conveniently, and easily. And as you have the ability to go through your life and do that, you can very, very quickly come to the point where you master life. The whole point of being on the physical plane is to go beyond the restriction of it, to go beyond the manipulation, especially in interpersonal relationships, and to become a transcendent, free, loving, creative individual. Let us talk, first of all, about the relationships that you have with your family, friends, and workmates. Obviously, the relationship that you may have with your mother and father is always a complex one. And the reason it is complex is that when you were a child, the subconscious mind that is a part of your personality began to record all the events that your mother and father created around you. So when they had a conversation, that conversation is somewhere in your mind. Nothing is ever lost. We could take you back in a hypnotic trance to your 10th birthday, and we could tell you how many people were there, what their names were, how many bowls of jelly you ate, what happened at that situation. In the mind, nothing ever is lost. It goes through a change, but it's always there. And so as you look at your mother and father, what you're looking at is a pattern within yourself. You are looking at the transfer of energy that came from your father that you picked up, and that was how you began to learn about masculinity. As you look at your mother, she gave you a quantum of energy, which is now yours, and from her you learned femininity. And the reason why there is so much tension between father and son, or mother and daughter, or the other way around, is because each of those people is looking at a reflection of themselves. When you look at your mother, you will look at her weaknesses, and it will remind you that you have similar or exactly the same weaknesses. When you look at your father, you will see his weaknesses, and it will frustrate you that you haven't gone past your weaknesses. And so within that mother-father and children relationship, you have to understand that your father didn't come to the earth plane to be perfect, and neither did your mother. And if you were perfect, you wouldn't be here either. The whole point of being a human is that we can have these weaknesses, these debilitations, and we get to work through them. And so as you deal lovingly with your parents, first of all, you have to allow them the reality that they have. And secondarily, you have to remember that you arrived in the physical plane one generation later than they did. Things that you take for absolute granted today were not around when they were learning. And so they are bound to have a different mindset or worldview, as it's sometimes called, than you have. When you can understand that, it allows you freedom. It allows you to back off from the emotion involved in these interpersonal relationships between the daughters and the sons and their parents, and it allows you to see that they are coming from a totally different perspective. Your perspective is no more right than their perspective. Theirs works perfectly in their environment, and yours works perfectly in your environment, even if there's a certain amount of imperfection within it. Now, when you become a parent, or if you are a parent, what will happen to you is you will have the quantum of information that you've gathered from your current life experience, and you will give that to your children in its totality. Everything that you believe about the life force or the God force in all things, about money, about sexuality, about making a success in the world, and so on. And what you will generally project upon your children are the hopes and dreams that you did not fulfill in your life. You'll project upon that child, I want you to be a success because perhaps you didn't get all of the success that you wanted. You'll project upon that child an image of yourself. And so the child becomes a replica or a representative of who you are. Then when that child goes out into the physical plane and does things that do not enhance your image, that do not make you feel better or look like a better person in society, or doesn't support you emotionally in one way or another, you'll become frustrated or angry. And so the relationship between the parents and the child is one of transferring energy to the child and also transferring expectations. The relationship between the child and the parents is inheriting an energy that is somewhat stale by the time the child gets it, and then trying to make some sense out of the debilitation of an old energy in a new generation or new era. The way to deal with this is to back off from having an opinion as to what the child is supposed to do, and back off from creating inside your child the expectations that you never fulfilled. I know an example of this that's very close to me, which would graphically illustrate it. My uncle had a very, very authoritarian father, who was my grandfather. And my grandfather, because he came from a humble background in southern Sicily, wanted my uncle to become a professional person. So he shoved him off to law school, which my uncle hated. And my uncle, in fact, wanted to live on the land and be a farmer. But because my grandfather couldn't accept his son as an extension of himself, because he was basically on the land living in the mountains of Sicily, he didn't allow that boy to go do what he actually wanted. And so my uncle wound up going to university, taking a law degree, becoming a lawyer, and becoming also one of the most niggly, boring, negative people I know. I love him because I can leave him alone, but you wouldn't want to hang out with the guy for 10 seconds. And the reason you wouldn't is because his train was going in one direction, and the father switched the rails and sent him in another direction that would enhance the image that the father wanted. We do that upon our children each and every day in a multitudinous amount of ways, whether it's dealing with a family dinner and what they're supposed to eat or how they're supposed to dress or the way they're supposed to talk or how much study they're supposed to do and so on and so forth. We impose that upon our children. When you can lovingly give to your children all the information you have, all the world knowledge and experience you've collected, and allow them to sift through so they develop a philosophy or personality for themselves, suddenly the relationship becomes free. You see, you can give somebody a good idea, but that idea has to become their idea. You cannot impose a philosophy upon people. You cannot impose rules upon them, because when you do, they become onerous, they become boring, and the people resent you for the fact that you've imposed this restriction upon them. The way to get people to do what you want and to move to a healthy, strong adulthood, in the case of children, is to begin to infiltrate their minds with ideas that the children will then accept and become theirs. So you can say to a child, "Eat your spinach," and the child will automatically say, "No." But then if you talk to the child in very reasoning terms, saying the body has a need for a certain amount of carbohydrates, it has need for roughage, if you eat these kinds of foods, your body will be strong, you'll become more athletic, more healthy, more good-looking, your pimples will clear up or whatever it is, then the child can spend a day or two or a week or a month thinking about that, and as you constantly reinforce that in your own lifestyle, the child will adopt it. So often the parents are imposing a discipline or a lifestyle upon the child that they don't live. They will say to the child, "Don't smoke," but they smoke. They will say to the child, "Don't stay up late," but the parents stay up late. They will say to the child, "Eat the right foods," and the parents eat junk. And so you can't expect the child to take on anything that you're not prepared to take on. So, as a parent, you're looking at developing a certain kind of lifestyle discipline, and you're looking at dealing with the child politically. Not from an authoritarian control situation, but politically, where you're showing him or her all of the good aspects of life, the loving, nurturing, kind, caring aspects. But then you have to be loving, nurturing, and caring yourself. If you stand in the kitchen and you moan about your neighbor being a terrible person, you can't then say to the child, "Please go out and be loving to your schoolmates," because the child will see you not being loving to your schoolmates, so to speak. So as we look at that, we can see that a tremendous amount of energy, emotional energy, is developed in the families, and a tremendous amount of reflection is there. As the children reflect their parents, and the parents reflect back to the children, each one of them having an opinion. So many families are battlegrounds, and they gather together at the family dinner to literally wage war. And the reason they wage war is that four people or five people get round a table, and each one has a position to defend, has an opinion, and each one of them is not coming out of an infinite perspective as to the reality of others. When you can look at another person in whatever situation you find them and allow that person their reality, whatever it is, it frees you. When you're sucked in emotionally to that person, you are living and breathing their life. And once you're living and breathing their life, it complicates your own. The more clarity you can bring to your life, the more you get in touch with that loving inner intuition that is constantly flowing from within your feelings and from within your mind that will allow you an enlightenment to your path. So as we look at relationships, we can see that when you judge somebody, when you criticize them, when you have an opinion about them or an expectation as to what you want them to do, you are creating a prison for them to live in. And isn't it true that if you hold an expectation about somebody, 9 times out of 10, they don't follow through? They may follow through once and they may follow through twice, but then the following Thursday, they don't show up. And then you have a reason to be angry. Hey, I had an expectation that he would show up on Thursday and bring me 2 pints of milk, and he didn't show. And I needed the milk, and he's let me down, and he doesn't love me. When you don't have opinion, when you come out of non-judgment and non-criticism, you move into absolute, infinite, unconditional love. And unconditional means that you do not put any conditions upon that person. Now, that isn't so simple. Because what you have to do then is you have to clarify your own opinion and your own position. Once you can begin to clarify that position, you become free. And the reason why the world is full of billions of people that are not free is because they all hold a position, or they all hold a decision about other people, or they have this thing that they have to defend. There are two forms of love, in my opinion. There's emotional love that one has in romance or when one is with a friend. There's a love between the families. And that kind of love is, to me, often very gooey. It's very mucky. It always seems to me like this wet lick in the ear. And that kind of love is almost imposing, because when you gush all over somebody and you say, I love you and you're marvelous, what you're saying is, please love me back. You know, please accept all of this emotion and make that into something and give me some kind of recognition back because I love you. Unconditional love allows you a clarity. And that clarity can only begin to take place when you detach yourself from the opinions of others. In the same way as you're going to try to de-escalate the amount of opinion you have about things, you also are going to cut yourself off from what other people think about you. A person who has an opinion about you, who says you're a good person or you're not a good person, you're reliable or unreliable or whatever that may be, that is their opinion and comes out only from whatever mindset they've taken on. So if your neighbor says you're a terrible person, that is her view. And her view will come out of all the programming and all the beliefs and opinions she may have. In fact, what your neighbor thinks doesn't make you a terrible person or a good person, only what you think. When you can detach from what other people think about you, again, you begin to loosen up your life and you begin to add clarity and freedom into your life. Other people's opinions of you are just their reality. And you can honor their decision to hold whatever opinion they like. But they should not be able to influence you in acting or not acting in a certain way. I came out of the British tradition, and the whole tradition is based on class. It's based on where do you come from, how do you act, what do you dress, what do you say, and basically maintaining a kind of status quo that takes a tremendous amount of energy. And the only reason it takes a lot of energy is that the people that are in that class system believe that what other people think of them is important. There isn't a living soul upon our great planet that can affect you if you don't let them. If your auntie doesn't like you, that's her reality. If your boss doesn't like you, that's his reality. And if he fires you, it's probably time for you to move on, because why would you want to spend a third of your life on the planet in a workplace with a bunch of people who are negative about you? And so once you can begin to de-escalate that feeling, you can pull out. So what you're looking at is a mindset or thought form inside of you that you believe, that you resonate, that is truly a part of your consciousness, that says, what other people think of me is not anything to do with me. I'm not going to go out there and try to act to make them love me. I'm not going to go out there to try to make them accept me. I'm not going to do things to make them happy, necessarily. If they want to be happy, that's wonderful. I'll be happy with them, and we'll all be joyous together. If they're unhappy, I can allow them their unhappiness. If they don't ask for my assistance, I won't offer it. If they ask me, I'll help them as best I can. Then suddenly, do you see how that can pull you one step out of the emotion of the people? As we look at our world today, we look at a tremendous amount of interaction. When you are locked deeply into the mindset of the people, you are not free. You have to live and breathe the news, so to speak. It's almost like watching the television at night and listening to some news that isn't particularly positive and feeling less positive because you heard that news. I mean, if you hear about some event that took place 1,000 miles away, what does it have to do with you? But if you allow your emotions to be sucked in and you say, oh gosh, how terrible, how scary, how awful, suddenly your energy will drop because you're being pulled into a piece of information and you're creating some kind of credence to that information, and so your energy falls. So as we look at loving relationships, we can see that if you will allow everybody else their freedom and you are comfortable with allowing yourself yours, you begin to clear the ground around you so that you can establish relationships that are loving. As you look for success in life, the success in relationships is paramount. And for relationships to be successful, they have to have this unconditional love, they have to have the detachment, and beyond that, they have to have honor and respect. If you cannot honor a person to be what they are, you cannot possibly create a loving relationship with them. If you do not respect them, again, that loving relationship cannot be there. And respecting them is not looking up to them. Respecting them is allowing them to be. Allowing them and knowing that in the infinite grace that is in all things, that person is infinite. And if they don't get all of the life's lessons today, that doesn't matter. They have the rest of infinity to figure it out. Now, maybe what they're doing and their actions are repulsive to you, or you don't agree. Then you have the ability, if you are emotionally unattached, to walk away. And the greatest strength for an individual is the ability that he or she has to vote with their feet. And yet, so often, we don't. So often we live in a relationship that is totally revolting, that winds up in a breakdown of our physical body, because we don't have the strength to walk away. We work for industries and corporations that are manipulative and restrictive, and we don't make any money at it, and we hate it, and we don't walk away. If you are detached from the emotions, if you feel secure inside yourself as an individual, you will always have the ability to walk away. And so if a person absolutely does not reflect your morality, your standards, your mindset, then you do have that option of moving away. But without the honor and without the respect, the relationship cannot work, whether it's husband and wife, lovers, or an interpersonal relationship within family. As you honor a person, you're also going to want to create for that person the space in which they can grow. You can infuse a person with a lovely idea, an inspirational thought, a good nutritional plan, whatever it may be, but they have to have time to make it their own idea. The average person lives in a 72-hour time frame. That means that they have their life intricately planned out for 3 days, and then the rest of their life is less planned out. But everybody lives inside that 72-hour framework. If you infuse an idea into somebody's consciousness, you can be sure that most times they will not be able to do anything about it for 72 hours. At the end of 72 hours, they may begin to think about that idea. Usually what happens when you give somebody a clever idea or an inspirational thought is that they put it into the back of their mind and they allow it to simmer. But they've already got everything planned out till Saturday, so they won't think about it until Sunday morning when they're sitting down reading the paper. So you have to give people space. If they don't jump to attention, if they don't react immediately, it will often cause you frustration. But when you allow people space to begin to create whatever it is they want to create, it allows you to detach from the emotion of saying this thing has to happen by Saturday or else. When you infuse an idea in another human being, they not only need the space to make that idea their own, but also that idea will have to literally be sifted through their consciousness. And as they sift it through their consciousness, it is going to undergo a certain amount of change. And so you may say to them, why don't you paint your house green? And you have a visualization of forest green. And they get green in their mind, and they will have a whole different set of tumblers or programming as to green. And then what happens is you walk around a week later, and yes, they did paint their house green, but it wasn't forest green. They painted it lime green, and they differentiated the bricks with a red line. And you look at it, and you think, God, that looks absolutely revolting. I told them green, and they made it something totally different. If you're not in the opinion, you're just going to cast the thoughts out there, cast your goodness, cast your gift to the world, and you're going to give them the space and the time to make it their idea. Once it becomes their idea, you have impacted people, and you've created a relationship that is loving because you're transferring to them a higher consciousness or an ideal, and you've allowed them to collate it into their experience. As you do that, and as you understand that, it allows those people that you interact with a sense of security. Nobody wants to be told what to do. Nobody wants to be infringed upon. And nobody wants to be manipulated or threatened. And so many relationships, especially lovers and wives and husbands, involve a lot of threat, a lot of manipulation, and a lot of infringement. Isn't it true that in many marriages, both parties play a sort of variant type of takeaway? It is like, I will give you this if you give me that. If you don't do the shelves in the kitchen, I will take away sex Saturday night. And then the husband comes from, if I give you this day on the beach, what I want is, and you play negotiation with each other. As you do that, it begins to destroy the relationship because each of you is undermining the other person by touching them in the place where they should feel secure. And you know, because you know that person really well, that you can almost dive into their feelings and rattle the security. You can rattle their cage. And so when you're with a person very, very intimately in whatever situation it may be, they have to lower their defenses. They have to allow you into their feelings in order for a loving relationship to be created. If you then infringe upon that by playing those insecurity games with them, or if you allow them to play that game with you, then suddenly the relationship will fall apart. If a person that is in your life, in whatever circumstances you find yourself with them, if they begin to manipulate you, you have to call that manipulation. And you can call it lovingly. You can play them at their own game, so to speak, because you can say to them, I love you very dearly. I honor your decision not to do the kitchen shelves, but I'm not going to be manipulated into sex because of it. Or I'm not going to act in this way or that way because you're threatening to take away something that I want. If you want to take away the car on Saturday, which I need, then take the car on Saturday. But understand that I will not be manipulated into acting because you're doing that. As you can understand that, what happens is you begin to diffuse this negotiation that goes on. You begin to diffuse the battle. And once you don't have to have a battle, you can begin to come together heart to heart, two loving individuals, each one of them respecting and honoring the infinity in the other person. Manipulation is basically a disease. It's a kind of bad habit, and it comes out of total weakness. As human beings, when we have to manipulate or threaten another person or cajole them into a situation, what we're saying is, I do not have enough energy or charisma within myself to get these people to take on what it is I want them to do. When you know you have that power, and when you're not in the opinion as to whether they take it on or not, then you do not have to manipulate them. And manipulation is part of one of the lessons that we learn on the physical plane. All the institutions, all the associations, the entire world is designed to manipulate you into supporting it. And you do. And you pay your taxes, and you support the cities, and you support the associations, and you keep that stuff up, and they manipulate you one way or another to do so. In the family, in the home, what you're looking at is trying to create a healing sanctuary for the people that live there. And the very last thing they want in that family is a reflection of the outside world that is so diseased, so sick, and so unpleasant so often. What they want to do is they want to be able to come out of the hustle and bustle of daily life, out of the need to make a living, to travel, to do the things they do, and they want to be able to come back into this home and experience love and friendship and togetherness and entertainment and nutrition and rest and whatever it is they've come home for. So, as you understand that, you can see that it's very, very important to allow a person to have their security base. If you go in there and you rattle their security, they're going to react emotionally, first of all, because everyone deals with fear. And secondarily, the whole purpose of a relationship is to create security for each other. The whole purpose of being in love is for both of you to be together on this heroic journey and say, hey, we're coming together to create a unit, and we know that that unit will be more secure than each one of us being out there individually. There being more strength in a group than in the individual pattern. As you understand that, then what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to express to all the people around you a supportive energy. And support may be, as I said before, leaving them alone. Support may be giving them advice when they need it and allowing them to act upon it. Support may be doing things that you know will assist that loved one to become stronger. Doing things that you know will assist them emotionally to process whatever negativity is in their life. The difficulty arises when each party wants to win the high ground and doesn't come out of subjugating their ego for the other person's needs. When you can subjugate your personality or subjugate your ego and lovingly support the other person's needs, you get back from that person an energy that will sustain you. But so often we're in these relationships as like a battle for the high ground. Supporting another individual may be anything from washing his socks to bringing her some flowers to breakfast in bed to a ride down to the beach or whatever it may be. But support comes from watching what it is they need and watching their energy pattern changing, their mood changing, and realizing, oh, at this time, what would be supportive would be to put this action in here or put this quantum of energy in there. If a female is prepared to support her husband, the husband grows because he sees himself in the reflection of her spirituality. And then as he grows and he goes out into the world and he creates things and he gets paid for them, he needs to bring that back and honor her for the energy that she put in.
Please stop the cassette now and turn the tape over to continue the program on the other side.